like the book of Ecclesiastes. It's my kind of book. It's down and dirty. I mean, it doesn't sugarcoat it. It just tells you how you know it is anyway. You just buy the sugarcoating because at least there's some hope that it's not as bad as we suspect. But Solomon gets down and dirty. And actually, the book of Ecclesiastes really has showed up in a lot of different venues in our culture. For example, did you know that the title from the movie, Samuel Jackson, I think, was one of the actors in there, A Time to Kill, was from Ecclesiastes 3:3. The old bird song, some of you may remember it, Turn, 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 comes from Ecclesiastes 3:1-8. The Kansas song, Dust in the Wind, was inspired by Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Did Dan teach you all of this stuff while I was gone? He didn't. That's terrible. I mean, this is big, important stuff. Now, I discovered some even rarer facts about the book of Ecclesiastes that I'll bet you don't know. The phrase, a little bird told me so, remember your grandmother, your mother, your grandmother's mother used to say that? Well, a little bird told me so. It comes from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 10, verse 20. Never make light of the king, even in your thoughts. And don't make fun of a rich man either. A little bird may tell them what you said. So grandma was right. A little bird probably did squeal on you when you thought you were hiding so cleverly. Well, another very surprising fact about Ecclesiastes that I just learned is that men really are better than women, according to Ecclesiastes 7:28. I didn't write this. Don't throw the fruit at me. Okay? Solomon says, the wisest man on earth said, just one out of every 1,000 men I interviewed can be said to be upright, but not one woman. I did not write it. I'm just sharing it. Look it up for yourself. You'll see it. Now, an even more surprising thing, I mean, this really caught me, blindsided me. That is that God is actually a conservative Republican. According to Ecclesiastes 10:2, it's true. The heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left, okay? I was just as surprised as you are to find that out. I always suspected, but I really didn't have any proof. Now I have. Well, okay, let's talk about connecting with God. I think this is an especially appropriate follow-up to last week's discussion of death and hell, don't you? We talked about in there, Solomon said, you know, you better stop and think about everlasting life. Think about life after the grave. Go to funerals. Don't go to parties while there's still time. The clock is ticking and time's running out. You better get it handled now. So how do we do that? Let's talk about how can we actually make that connection with God that Solomon really stresses for us. Solomon, in the book of Ecclesiastes, really takes us on quite a journey to find meaning under the sun, meaning to life under the sun. And I think he is just the perfect guy to be writing about this because he had all the money, all the power, all the time necessary to conduct this research. And even though everything, I mean, there was hardly any option that was not available to him, a live option to him, and he still found, after trying everything he could imagine, he still found that lasting happiness under the sun was, you just can't find it. There is no lasting, fulfilling happiness under the sun. He was the Bill Gates of his day. And as such, there was just nothing that he needed to deny himself. It's like you and I, you know, we're concerned about making next month's house payment and, you know, next month's rent. And Bill Gates is thinking, how can he afford that small country? And so it's like money's no object. He can do anything he wants to do. And yet he comes up short and he says, you know, Microsoft just doesn't do it for me. It's not filling me. It's still, with all of that, with all those options, and with all those experiences, he says, I still only find futility and emptiness under the sun. And so Solomon's conclusion, I believe, reached late in his life, is that no matter how good we can make it, life under the sun will never completely satisfy us, because God created us with a God-shaped hole in our soul. And when we try to fill that hole with anything but God, it's like trying to put a square peg in a round hole. It just doesn't fit. C.S. Lewis made this observation. He said, I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy. The most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. The reason it doesn't fit, the reason it doesn't satisfy, is because this isn't what I was created to experience ultimately. And so Solomon's message to us in the middle of the book, chapter 5, and again he touches on it in chapter 12, is that life is really about connecting with God. I want to read Ecclesiastes 5, verses 1 through 7, and we're going to keep bouncing back and forth to that in our discussion today. Ecclesiastes 5, Solomon says, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. As a dream comes when there are many cares, so the speech of a fool when there are many words. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin. And do not protest to the temple messenger, my vow was a mistake. Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, stand in awe of God. So how do we do that? How do we make a genuine, for real connection with God? I want to start with two underlying premises that are undergirding everything that I say from here out. Number one is that connecting with God is possible. This would be very cruel to tell you you needed to connect with God if it weren't possible. Jeremiah, one of my favorite writers, he's another guy that tends to tell it like it is, and it's not always happy news, but in Jeremiah 29, verses 12 through 14, he says, and this is God speaking, and by the way, he is preparing Israel for the coming punishment or chastisement that they're about to undergo, 70 years of captivity to the Babylonians because they've been so disobedient to him. But he says, you will call upon me at the end of that time and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you. In fact, that's not just limited to Jeremiah or to the nation of Israel. I believe that is true of us today. God would say the same thing to us today were he writing a personal letter to us. In fact, that is the sentiment reflected in Hebrews 11:6, where the writer says, without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So finding God, connecting with God, is possible. This is not a quest for the impossible, but it does require a wholehearted effort, not a half-hearted one. The second underlying assumption that I'm making here is that we cannot connect with God apart from Jesus Christ. There are not multiple ways to God. All roads do not lead to God. Jesus himself said in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So if you truly want to connect to God, let me say, first of all, it is possible. It is something that you can do. And secondly, you do have to go through Jesus in order to do it. You cannot get there from here without him. Now, there are four keys that I want to share with you this morning to connecting with God. Number one is show up. That's kind of a good way to start, huh? You got to show up. He's not going to drag you out of bed, okay? And also, show up where God tends to meet people. For us, probably the most logical place to start, if I'm looking for God, I would say, well, you know, it sounds reasonable that he might be findable at church. So that's where I'm going to show up. That's not always a guarantee, but it's a good place to start, okay? We have to show up and put ourselves in places where God tends to meet with people. Ecclesiastes 5:1, he says, go to the house of God. That's a logical place to start looking for him, isn't it? See if he's home. And in Solomon's day, that was the temple. And he's saying, get together with other people who are also earnestly seeking to connect with God. Show up where those people tend to show up, and we're working on this collectively together. This isn't an individual thing. This is a together thing. Someone once observed that God made us like briquettes or firewood. When you pile them all together, they burn hot and they burn for a long time. But if you separate them, the fire will go out. I think that's what Hebrews 10:25 had in mind when he says, let us not give up meeting together, showing up where one another, where we are gathered, as some are in the habit of doing. A lot of people don't go to church. They're not here today. But let us encourage one another. When we show up at church, that's a little more than just putting your live body in the building, all right? Make sure that we actually show up where we're ready, we're prepared to learn from the Word of God about God. We are prepared to be encouraged in our faith, where we're prepared to encourage others in their faith. Show up. Don't make attending church a passive experience. It was never intended to be a passive experience. Shortly after I came to know Christ and got out of the service, I found Christ, or maybe better put would be he found me in a little tiny Baptist church in Sacramento. But when I got out of service, I lived in Chico. Yeah, that's up north about 100 miles. I was so green and ignorant about Christianity and church things. I was raised in the Catholic Church in Chico, and I really didn't know there were other churches in Chico besides the Catholic Church. And so every Wednesday and every Sunday, I drove to Sacramento. That's where the church was. I thought it was the only one in the world, I guess. And these guys were nuts. I mean, they really were. They were, well, I shouldn't say that. They were nutty in a good way. They let me sing in the choir. Can you believe that? Last time I sang here to the youth group, they got up and walked out on me. I thought that was rather rude, but I do understand. I basically attended everything. When the church doors were open, I was there because that was a place where I found life. That was a place where I was growing. That was a place where I was learning about God and what he planned for my life, and I couldn't get enough of it. Man, I was showing up big time. Well, then I accepted a challenge to teach the seventh grade boys Sunday school class. I didn't know seventh grade boys are not human yet. And so I did it. I said, yeah. Man, was I ever stretched and surprised at the same time. I learned so much about God and about faith and those things. Why? Because church was not a passive experience for me. Man, I was in the heart of it. I was dialed in and active. And so God was able to get a hold of my life and show me the way to closer life with him. You know, God has given us one another, like it or not. He's given us the church so that we can connect with him together. This is a team sport. We can encourage one another when we're together. We can discover the heart of God through the scriptures together. That's how he intends it to work. Worship together. Bear one another's burdens. That doesn't mean gossip around town, bear them around town. It means to pray and to struggle and to weep with those who weep and laugh with those who laugh. good study. I'll challenge you to take on if you haven't done it. And if you have done it, do it again. That's a good reminder, is study the little phrase "one another" throughout the New Testament. It will surprise you what God intends for us to be doing with one another. It's a good study. So show up, okay? And then secondly, shut up. Or if you prefer, listen up. That's probably the more polite way. I would never use the words "shut up" personally. I always taught our kids not to say that. It was not polite. But Solomon, remember, was the king. He can say whatever he wants, all right? But that really does pretty much sum up what Solomon is saying there. Show up and shut up. He says in verses 1 and 2, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than offer the sacrifice of fools who don't know that they're doing wrong. Don't be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you on earth. Let your words be few. Be quiet. The noisiest place that I experience on a regular basis is church. Man, I can't hardly hear half the time. Some of you, I really do envy the fact that you need hearing aids now, because you can turn them down and drown out some of that noise. I'm getting there, but I'm not there yet. All I hear is this racket. If you want to have some quiet time to connect with God, it probably isn't going to happen at church. It's too noisy. We're busy talking. We're fellowshipping. We're doing. And if we were to shut off the computer and the sound and the microphone and everything and just say, okay, now we're going to sit here for the next half hour and just be quiet and listen for God, it would drive us nuts, myself included. It's very difficult. Solomon's father David said basically the same thing, Psalm 46:10. Be still, be quiet, shut up for a while and know that I am God. Most of the time we can't connect with God because he can't get a word in edgewise. I believe one of the biggest hindrance to us connecting with God is our inability to be quiet. One writer said, Marx was wrong. Religion is not the opiate of modern man. Incessant sound is. Do you get uncomfortable when there's no background noise or something going on around you? I do. Pascal put it this way. All men's miseries derive from not being able to sit in a quiet room alone. I told you last week that one of the most profound things in my life and my journey to connect with God was Vietnam. And it wasn't the war as much as it was the quietness during the night watches when I couldn't make noise or drown out that quiet little voice that kept gnawing on me, and God continuing to scrutinize my life and my sinfulness and my need for him and bring that to my attention, and I couldn't shut it up. I couldn't make noise and drown it out. And I've noticed in my life that I'm always so busy and so into doing things that when I try to sit quietly in a room alone with God, I feel guilty because I'm not getting anything done. I'm not accomplishing anything. I'm wasting time. And I think a lot of us feel that way. That may be why we keep running faster and faster from project to project, deadline to deadline, meeting to meeting, event to event, practice to practice, and eventually it's almost impossible for us to slow down and be quiet. We're never quiet before God in our culture. We never even shut up when we're praying. Often when we pray, when we try to connect with God, we even fail to listen or watch for an answer. I remember one night I'd been on the road driving truck from where we lived in Meteetse, Wyoming, down to Salt Lake City, I think. And I really wanted to get home. It was the middle of the night. It was cold. And I got to the top of Salt River Pass, and my truck broke down. My brakes went out. And I did not want to spend the night on that pass. I wanted to go home. And so I did what any reasonable man would do. I got out my flashlight so I could see, and a hammer, and started pounding on things to fix it, right? Isn't that what we do? You hit things. Okay, it could be the compressor. Whack! Whoop, that wasn't it. And I couldn't fix it. So in desperation, I did what I rarely do. I actually kneeled down on the side of the road and asked God to whatever he wanted to do, do it so that I could get home. And then I got up and started walking to town. And I didn't get very far when the thought struck me, you just asked for something, right? Didn't you just pray? Maybe you should at least go back and check it out, see if anything happened. That seems like a reasonable next step. So I did. And to make a long story short, my truck worked, and I got home that night. But see, I wasn't willing to even take the couple of minutes to look. I said what I needed to say, and now I'm taking charge again, and I'm going to walk to town. We need to get quiet sometimes and just go to the house of God to listen, to hear the voice of God. So we need to show up, we need to shut up, and then we need to give up. Many of you are or have been in 12-step programs, and you know that the first step toward a clean life is admitting that you are powerless to overcome your self-destructive behavior. In other words, the first step toward health and wholeness is to give up, to admit our inability to do for ourselves what only God can do. We have to realize that we are powerless to resolve our sin problem, and we have to turn our lives over to Christ. Now, I'm talking about surrender, not just commitment. And I want to split that hair this morning. Solomon says in verse 5 and 6, it is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin. What is he saying with that? He's saying that when we go to God, our tendency is to make promises, vows, to turn over a new leaf. I mean, after all, we're in trouble. That's why we're going in the first place, usually. To promise that next time I'll be better. Next time I'll try really, 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 really hard. Psalm is saying, in effect, you know, show up, shut up, sit down, and be quiet. Give up. God doesn't want you to come to him and make promises that you can't keep anyway. He wants you, and he wants you to know him. That's it. Solomon says, much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, stand in awe of God. In other words, be quiet and stand in awe of God. Surrender to him. Now, the word surrender, as I'm using it, means the act of willing submission to an authority. Commitment is a little different. It is devotion or dedication. Now, let me ask you this. Is it possible to have one without the other? I think it is. We can surrender our lives to God's authority because he's bigger than us, he's more powerful than us, we don't want him to crush us. So we can surrender to his authority, but yet have no devotion, no dedication, no loyalty to him at all. It's just we're surrendering to the bully right now because we feel like we have to. In essence, it is possible for us just to have the recognition that God is bigger and more powerful than we are, and we don't want him thumping us. I think it's also possible for us to make a commitment to God without really surrendering our wills to him, which I think probably is the case more often than not in our lives. Commitment alone can be about me and what I value. It can be, God, I promise you that I'll do better. That's our commitment. I commit my life to you and to doing better. That's what we say. The unspoken other half of that statement, that declaration is, and I expect you to do better too. Isn't that true? God, I will do A, B, C, and I expect you'll do D, E, and F. I'll do better. You need to do better too. I love what Larry Crabb wrote in his book, Finding God. Very sobering, very convicting words to me. He says, finding him had more to do with using him to get what I valued than enjoying him for who he is. I wanted to harness his power rather than submit to it. Big difference. Surrender is about finding God and connecting with God simply because of who he is, not because of what he can do for us. And oftentimes, I'm afraid, our quest for God is a search for help, not a search for him. We honestly need to quiet down once in a while and ask ourselves, honestly, does my commitment to God have more to do about getting the things I need, the things I desire, such as sobriety, godly kids, a better job, good health, security? I mean, you fill in the blanks. Does my commitment to God have more about getting those things that I need than it has to do with simply knowing God for who he is? I'm going to give us time to think about this question. If I got none of those things that I value and need and deeply desire, would knowing Christ and having Christ be enough for me? Would we, like Job did, sit there in that pile of ashes covered with open, painful sores, homeless, home destroyed, wrecked, business destroyed, wrecked, just like that, lost his whole family except this nagging wife that kept buzzing in his ear, "Why didn't you curse God and die? What'd you do wrong?" God did save that for him. Kind of a morbid sense of humor he must have, isn't it? Would you be willing to sit there in all of that misery, absolutely destitute, totally sick, unhealthy, and say, "Even if he slays me, I will not curse him. I want him for who he is. As limited as my understanding and knowledge of him is, I still want Jesus and Jesus alone. My goal is to know God, no matter what else happens around me." Pretty hard question. In the days of the Romans, the Roman army would lead their prisoners away with their hands bound together like this. And so when an army wanted to surrender to the Romans, their sign of surrender was to hold their hands together in the same way. We would hold our hands up. They would hold their hands together as if bound. And so when early Christians in Rome wanted to pray and they wanted to express their desire and their sentiment of surrendering themselves to God and their wills to God, they folded their hands in the same way, the same sign of surrender. And Solomon, I believe, is saying that is the bottom line of life. Surrender your will to God. In Ecclesiastes 12:13, he says, here's the bottom line. Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God. In other words, surrender your will to him. And keep his commandments. Obey him. For this is the whole duty of man. So if you want to connect with God, you got to show up, you got to shut up, you got to give up, and then last of all, look up. He says in verse 7, stand in awe of God. Well, there's an old story that I think bears repeating. This guy in Ohio who won $50 million in the lottery, and as he was being interviewed after that great win, he was asked, "What are you going to do with all that money?" He said, "Well, I always wanted one of them 8-slice toasters. And I think I'm going to have the dents in my Pinto fixed." Can you imagine that? $50 million and he's going to have body work done on his Pinto? Are you kidding me? He didn't realize that his whole life could be different. Money was no longer a problem. And yet his highest aspirations are to fix his old car and buy an 8-slice toaster. Now that strikes us as odd, but think about what God has done for us. God became man, lived among us so we could see what he was like, even bore our sins in his own body so that we could be reconciled with him, so that we could connect with him forever. He has even recorded and preserved a revelation of himself in the Bible. And sometimes all we can see is our old Pinto and their need for an 8-slash toaster. Psalmist says, look up. Stand in awe of the mercy and the grace and the connection that God offers you. Now, there's one last thing that Solomon says about connecting with God, and that's do it now. Another old story, Royal Dutch Airlines, quite some time ago, made an offer that turned out to be a real flop. If you were willing to fly standby, they would fly you anywhere in the world that an American Dutch or a Royal Dutch airline flew for only $80. Can you imagine that? Anywhere in the world for $80 and back. There was one catch, however. You couldn't get off the plane. Can you imagine? Guy gets back and the conversation, what'd you do on vacation? I went to Cancun. Wow, how'd that go? Well, I didn't really do much. I just landed and came back. But man, it was a good deal. How ridiculous. You know, we're not too much different, though. Some of you have been coming to church week after week, month after month, maybe even year after year. You may have even made a commitment to Christ, but you've never really surrendered your life and your will to Him. Some of you keep riding the plane without ever giving off, without ever saying, God, I want to totally surrender my will to You. I don't want to just be a sightseer anymore. I want to get off the plane and make a real connection with You. Solomon says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Don't wait till you get older, because you're not guaranteed that time. Do it now, he says, before the days of trouble come and the dust returns to the ground it came from. Do it now. Do not put it off. I want to give you a couple of minutes to reflect and respond to the issues that God may be raising through these scriptures. So I'm going to ask you to bow your heads and just try to block out everybody around you, and just between yourself and God, I want you to ask yourself this: have I gotten off the plane, or am I just flying around aimlessly? Am I just going through the motions of finding God but not really making a connection? Does my commitment to God have more to do with getting the things I need than it has to do with simply knowing God for who He is? If I got none of those things I need, would knowing and having Christ be enough? I pray that God will grant you wisdom and understanding so that you might grow in your knowledge of Him. I pray that your hearts will be flooded with light so that you can understand the wonderful future He has promised those who love Him. I pray that you will be able to understand and appreciate what a rich and glorious inheritance He has promised His people. I pray that you will begin to understand the incredible greatness of His power toward us who believe Him. I pray that you will surrender your will entirely to God, who is far above any ruler or authority or power or leader or anything else in this world or in the world to come. Amen. I'm going to ask the ushers to come.